Support for WPR comes from the American Society of Landscape Architects Wisconsin Chapter. Dedicated to reimagining the design of outdoor spaces for the well-being of all. Examples at wiasla.com.
Support for WPR comes from the Stevens Point area, offering a variety of getaway experiences, itineraries and ideas for beer lovers, foodies, outdoor recreation fans, and more are at StevensPointArea.com.
With Valentine's Day beginning its inevitable approach again this week, a lot of us are either feeling bitter or figuring out what to do to observe the holiday. Well, if you're going to celebrate, one surefire idea, a bottle of wine.
But picking out a good bottle of wine can be intimidating. How much do you spend? If you're bitter, what kind of wine do you get? If you're happy, what kind of wine do you get? And of course, the eternal question, red or white?
Marnie Old is here to help us out. She writes a wine column for the Philadelphia Daily News and is a featured speaker at the annual Food and Wine Classic in Aspen. Marnie, welcome to Central Time.
Well, thanks for having me, Veronica.
Why is picking out a bottle of wine something that can feel so intimidating to a grown adult?
You know, I think it has to do with the fact that wine, more than almost any other consumer product that we shop for on a regular basis, is so fractionalized in the sense that we are just looking at a more overwhelming list of options when we buy wine than in almost any other product, whether it's food, whether it's something that we shop for as a household item. Wine, being an agricultural product, is labeled by the name of its producer, and some of those can be very small farming operations. What ends up happening is that we just have this incredible array of choices, and for most people, that just feels overwhelming.
Right. Choice can be paralyzing instead of being something that's, you know, freeing. So how do you overcome that when you walk up to that giant wall of wines at a liquor store or a grocery store?
Well, I have to tell people, I have to tell you that I normally try to go against what we normally say in the wine business, which is learn the grapes you like and learn the regions you like. Well, that's helpful to a degree, but not very practical for most people who start trying to learn something about wine grapes and regions and discover it's a very complicated field. You don't need to have those things memorized in order to be able to orient yourself when you're facing that wall of options. First off, there are a few simple numbers you can use that are not point scores from magazines or anything like that, but that are included in the wine labeling or in the way that it's displayed that can help you figure out what it is that you're looking at. First off, price is a way of shopping. I mean, it is a way of sorting out the cheap and cheerful from the ambitious products in the same way that it would be for shopping for shoes or a box of chocolates. And price does tell us something tangible. In the world of wine, there are products that are bargain basement and certainly acceptable for their price range. And then there's stratospheric luxury price tags on some of these wines that can really leave people with sticker shock. What I try to explain is that there's also, just like in any other product, a point of diminishing returns. My feeling is that on average in the world of wine right now, for every extra dollar you spend up to around $15 or so, you're actually getting, you're buying something, you're getting odds of a better product. And those odds do improve quite a bit with each dollar up to about that point.
So you're saying if you're looking at a $10 wine, but you really want it to be something a little more special, spend a couple more bucks and you'll get a much better wine.
Even a dollar or two can make a difference, because if you think about it from the retailer's perspective, if a wine is sitting in the store for $11, and we all know that discounting it one more dollar to $9.99 would make it fly off the shelf, there's got to be a reason that retailer has decided that it's worth the premium. Generally speaking, those are important psychological numbers. So if it's selling for a little over, even just $11 or $12, it's often a significantly superior wine. When we start heading over $15, though, what happens is that we're still getting better odds of a higher quality wine with every extra dollar we spend. However, the increment of increased quality is smaller. So what happens is that we're not getting quite as big a jump in quality for every dollar or every $5 jump in price as we did below $15, if that makes sense.
So really, if you want to just play it safe, you'll just buy a $15 bottle of wine every time.
I think that's a pretty safe place for people to shop right now. First of all, it's a price tag that doesn't break the bank, but the wines that are currently selling around that price point are very well made. They're well crafted. This is a great time to be a wine drinker and a wine buyer because there's so little bad wine being made in the world right now.
So we've got the price nailed down a little bit, an idea of how much we get for our money. What about the selection itself? Are there wines out there that are just embarrassing? And if you bring them, you will reveal your ignorance to everyone, and everyone will point and laugh.
You know, that's so funny, and I'm really glad you brought it up, because there is a lot of insecurity and social anxiety that surrounds wine buying decisions here in the U.S. And I don't think that's the case so much in other countries where wine is perhaps more commonly served at the table as an everyday foodstuff. It's kind of seen as a staple and not really as a lifestyle statement quite the way it is here. But I have to say that this idea that you'll embarrass yourself by what you like to drink or what you buy or what you bring to someone's home as a gift, as when you're joining people for dinner parties and so on, that's a little, it's not really the case anymore. You know, 20 years ago, there were certainly styles of wine that were considered to be lesser than. And it's also true that there were certain regions that just weren't up to snuff at that point in terms of competing on a world-class level for quality production. However, so much has changed in the last 10, 20, 30 years in the wine world that we're finding world-class wines being produced all over the place, not just in regions that might have once been known for bargain basement products like Chianti in Italy, for example, but also in strange, far-flung lands. You can find fine wine being made in Brazil now. And so it's really not the case that a particular wine, a particular grape, a particular region is an embarrassing thing to buy. There might be a few things out there that I might still avoid bringing over to someone's house, like box wines, for example. Not so much because the wines aren't good, they are, but bringing a box kind of suggests that your guests or your hosts might like to overindulge.
And what about the names of the wines? Do you want to steer away from ones that might not be so delicate?
Well, especially since so many of them, we're seeing a lot more tongue-in-cheek names these days. You know, I remember when Fat Bastard first came out, and that was a big deal. It was a titillating name at the time. And, of course, it was a reference to the richness and opulence of the style of wine from south of France. But that, again, isn't something I might bring to somebody's home, you know, as a gift. I also saw something stacked out from Chile recently called Royal Bitch. I'm not sure I'd bring that to someone's house either.
So the name might matter when you're bringing it as a gift.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, what about the eternal question, red versus white?
Well, this is, you know, when Valentine's Day is around the corner, of course, people tend to tilt towards red simply because of the symbolism of the color. But whether you prefer white or red wine is really a very personal matter. It's sort of like your preference in music or art or fashion. And, of course, if the wine is being purchased for someone for this occasion, we're often thinking about the needs of our loved one and what they would like to receive. Certainly, orient around their preferences. If your honey is a white wine person, there's no need to bring red just because it's Valentine's Day. The reality is that these styles are, you know, a personal preference. Some people who love white have a hard time digesting red, find it gives them a headache or makes it difficult for them to sleep afterwards. And the reverse is also true. If someone is a diehard red wine drinker, they might find whites bland in general and not something that they would pull the cork on their own. But there are, of course, people who like both, and if you are an equal opportunity drinker, white or red, my preferences between white and red and what I recommend usually shift with the seasons. When it's cold outside, we tend to prefer stronger, bolder flavors, both in our food and in our wine. That's when we're most likely to eat slow-cooked foods, for example, and the bolder flavor of red wines particularly suits colder weather. That's one of the reasons we often drink them either after the sun has gone down when it cools off in the day, or in the fall and winter when it cools off in the season. White wines are the reverse. If we're serving wine while the sun is still high in the sky or when it's warm out and we're having summer fresh produce on the table, we're much more likely to be looking for refreshment. And that comes in those chilled wines with high acid, the zingy refreshment of fresh fruit that we more associate with whites.
Now, it's Valentine's Day coming up, and it might be a time when people want to splash out and get something a little more special. So let's say you do want to splash out and get $50 or spend $50 on a bottle of wine. Can you really taste it? Is it worth it versus that $15 bottle of wine we were just talking about?
Well, here's what I would say. If we have a $15 bottle of wine and a $50 bottle of wine side by side, and that they come from, you know, relatively similar grape variety, region of origin, and so on. If you're tasting them side by side, can you tell the difference? Absolutely. If you taste one today and one tomorrow, will you be able to quantify that difference very well? Not as well. And would I characterize the difference in quality as being over three times better in terms of the enjoyment that you get out of the premium wine? I don't think I could say that, even as a wine expert who's fully aware of the, you know, the improvements that you get when you spend a little more with wine. Now, what can you expect when you splurge? You can expect better ingredients, more craftsmanship, and that tends to reflect itself in layers of complexity and very pleasing aromatic nuances in the wine. But if the style of wine isn't your bag, if it's not a style that really works well for you, if you don't normally like dry aged reds, for example, then just buying a $50 version of it isn't going to please you any more than buying a $10 version.
And we're going to leave it there, Marnie. Thank you so much. You've helped illuminate this for us. That was Marnie Old for our Teach Me What You Know segment today. She writes a wine column for the Philadelphia Daily News.